Blog Talk Radio.
Were you made aware that you were adopted?
Well, I remember at a very young age, about 5 years old, but my father corrected me today and told me it was at the age of 12. But nevertheless, you know, it was at a young age, and I do remember, and I do thank my adoptive parents for not keeping it from me, because I've heard so many different other stories, you know, vice versa, from people like Gary Coleman, who sued his parents because they didn't tell him until he was way old, you know, older than what they, you know, suspected him to be. So I'm very thankful that they sat me down and told me at a young age to where I was able to comprehend and not have any, you know, animosity towards anybody from my birth mother to my adoptive parents, you know. So I thank them for that.
And that's so very important. I really commend your adoptive parents, your parents, that I'm clarifying for the sake of listeners who may not be
right
as cool. But I have come across, as a family therapist and doing work with foster and adopted children, you know, a couple of times people did not even tell the children. One wanted me to feed into, which, you know, we refer to now as the big lie, because
right,
that's not telling the child really who they are. And I think when adopted parents do choose to adopt, especially when the children are younger, and they really don't have any, you know, conscious awareness of what's really going on, that they tell them, because it's like they're not letting them know who they are. And it's like playing a game. I call it, you know, fantasy land, because
right,
sometimes adoptive parents want to live the fantasy, especially if they don't have biological children for themselves. But then also sometimes they think they're protecting the child by not telling them. So do you remember, there was an age difference between what your dad said and what you thought it was. Do you remember how they told you, or what stood out about them telling you? Maybe sometimes it's not the words, but it's just the feeling that you had, or the things that went on in your mind.
From my first experience, I remember them, you know, pulling me aside and, you know, making sure that I understood that they loved me, first of all, and that they always saw me as their own. And they told me that, you know, that I was adopted, and my mother and my father didn't keep anything from me, but they showed me my birth records as far as, you know, the history of my birth mother and my birth father, who they were and stuff like that, and the type
mm-hmm.
of personality that they came from, and the type of background that they had as far as employment and stuff like that, and hobbies and stuff like that. So I was well-rounded to a point to where, you know, I didn't still have a question mark, you know, above my head, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Wow. That's amazing. So what was it that you understood about your birth parent, about why they chose to place you for adoption?
Well, it was to my understanding that they already had, you know, too many kids of their own, and they, you know, couldn't afford another mouth to feed,
mm-hmm.
which is totally understandable. And I thank them for, you know, not aborting me, but allowing me to have a chance to make it in this world that, you know, that we live in. And, you know, it just gets me to where, you know, so many other people who, even babies who have been aborted because the mother or the father didn't have the financial means to support, and so instead of allowing someone else to have a chance to raise their child, they just, you know, in the child's life, which, you know, which I don't really understand, to, you know, and it gets to my heart, and I just wish that other people, you know, would have the chance to raise a child's life so that they can become somebody else, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And actually, there are some adopted children or adoptees, now adults, who feel slightly different than that. And sometimes I wonder if it's just about them going through the process and how they were told, but I think more so it's how much love they felt in their adoptive family. Fortunately, and thank God, you had a loving experience, and some
right.
of our adoptees, and you did not have to go through that bouncing from home to home before you found, as they say, your forever family, or before that
right.
your forever family found you, or you found each other. So that's, I think, the biggest difference and one of the messages that we want to put out to adoptees, that it's always said that when we have difficulties in life, if we just start to focus on the things that we're grateful for, that gratitude changes our attitude, which affects our altitude and how far we're able to go in life. And sometimes that hurt, that pain, and that resentment holds mm-hmm. people back from really realizing their true purpose in life, because I know we'll talk about it a little bit more, but when we spoke previously, we were saying that every life comes into this world with a purpose, regardless
right.
of how it got here.
So, right.
you know, one of my goals is to help adoptees who question their existence, or anyone for that matter, to be able to find the why in their lives. So your family did not just stop with you. I guess you did such a good job of keeping their hearts warm. They decided to open their hearts to other children. Is that
yeah,
correct?
I think I did too much of a good job.
So you were an only child until you were what age?
It was between 15 and 16.
Okay,
and,
so you were a teenager.
Right, and so my world came tumbling down after that.
And I'm knowing a little bit about the story, I was going to say, I'm sure you mean that in the most loving, positive way.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes. So who else became a part of your family?
Well, my parents adopted two other sisters, Shannon and Joy. Shannon is the oldest one, and Joy is the second oldest.
Okay, and they're both younger than you.
Right.
Oh, wow. So now
yes.
you become, instead of the prince of the household, you have to shift roles to become the big brother, the defender, and probably sometimes the offender.
and the big babysitter. So.
Ah, okay. So that's protector. That's the big brother. Wow, amazing. So, what was that shift like for you? Because I think a lot of times when families decide, okay, this worked out, and you know we want to have a larger family, and especially if you're going with older age children, as I did. So
right.
What? Go ahead.
Okay. What really changed me is that it gave me somebody that I was able to talk to, not just to myself and just having imaginary friends like I used to when I was by myself, you know, being younger. But
mm-hmm.
It gave me somebody that, you know, I was able, I wouldn't say so much have in common with, but somebody that was able to, you know, to keep me in, you know, so much grounded to where I had a responsibility.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be out there doing the wrong thing, because I knew that if I did the wrong thing, then they would, you know, see me doing the wrong thing, therefore they would be doing the wrong thing as well. So it kept me grounded to where I knew I couldn't go out to do everything else that everybody else was doing, because I have other siblings looking up to me. So
wow.
It helped me.
So you
in that
felt
fact.
You felt a sense of commitment and responsibility to your family,
right.
even more so. And I think on one hand, even though there was an age difference, I was going to say that they caused you to be less focused on the outside world and on the inside. So there was that interaction there, that sense of responsibility. And even though our age difference, somewhat playmates. They could probably
right.
give us some recreational activity in home.
Yes, it was a lot was a lot of that.
Yeah, it's interesting because myself, I was an only child until I was 11, and then my younger sister came along, who actually was born with a developmental disability. But still, that changed my world, and I was very excited, and it did give me more responsibility. My son, the older one, was, I think, 11. He came to me when he was 9, and then when he was 11, I adopted the younger son. They were 4 years apart. And we agreed that he did not want to be an only child. But when that other child got there, it was a whole different story. But there's something to be said. And I think how we make adjustments is based on how in tune people remain with one another. I'm sure your parents are very conscious of the difference for you being an only child to shifting and also going through that change of adolescence as well.
Right.
Right. So speaking of adolescence, let's go back to your school days in elementary school and middle school. I understand that those were brought about a change for you because you said you had been a happy, confident child before you entered the school system.
Yes, somewhat. And even in the school system where I was in Georgia, I really didn't know where I belonged or fit in at because there were a lot of children who were, you know, catching on to different things much more quicker than me. And
mm-hmm.
so certain teachers would try their best to make me understand what was going on. But somehow I didn't, you know, couldn't really catch on, and I would daydream while they would teach. And they would tell my parents that, you know, that I'm a known daydreamer during the class session. And so they didn't know what was wrong with me if I was able just to tune out whatever the teacher was teaching, because really it didn't pertain or catch my attention. So, from that point on, that's when I was placed in isolation from the other classmates. And I didn't really do any other of the schoolwork that they were doing. I would be focusing on doing my timetables 10 to 15 times each from number 1 all the way up to 11. And that's what I did all day until it was time to go home.
Now, my understanding is that you didn't have difficulties with all subjects. It was primarily one or two subjects.
It was math. It was mostly math and English.
Okay. And the subjects that you did do well in were?
Were history and gym. It was mostly history and gym, and whenever we had to do a spelling contest like that, that's something I would always excel in.
Okay.
The reason I
wanted to bring that out is because one of the things that happens with you, that happens to so many of our children, is that we tend to focus on the areas that they're not doing well in and put them in a limited situation, much like yours, or isolated situation, as opposed to allowing them to really excel even more so on the things that they have an affinity to. And it sounds like you actually had a gift that was overlooked. But I'm going to go back to an area that most people probably don't go. They brush it off. They said you were daydreaming. And in our culture, daydreaming is not really something that is celebrated. And I believe that there's a lot to the daydreaming, and there's even a statement by Einstein to the effect that imagination is really the key to our intelligence.
Right.
So do you remember what you would daydream about? Do you know where you would go in your daydream?
I was on stage with Michael Jackson.
All right.
That was where I was at.
Okay, and that happened.
Majority of my time. And
okay,
so whenever we would
talk about that, we're going to come back and talk about that because that was very significant.
Right.
And I hadn't asked you that question before, but I'm glad I did. So that is to say, to anyone who has a child who's daydreaming, rather than reprimanding them for that, you guide that. You know. Find out, pull what it's about and what it means, because I'm sure if anyone had engaged you in conversation about your daydreaming, your whole eyes, your whole soul probably would have opened up. They probably would have seen a side of you because that was one of the keys to you.
Right.
That was one of the keys as well as to your future. So, and the search. And so there is, you know, the cartoon that says, "Where's Waldo?" If people really have been interested to find out, where's Marcus? Where are you? I'm wondering if you would have given them a real answer. And if you had, how many people would have put you down for that? Because there was a place for that. It might have not been right there in the classroom, but there's a place, and that's how we guide our children.
Right.
So you were going to say something else. But don't tell the whole story yet, because I think I know where you're going.
No, so after school would be over, and I would, you know, get back home, I would close myself up in my room and put my music on, and so I would be able to live out the dream that I had, you know, during school. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I understand, so when you said they didn't know what to do with you in school, and they isolated you, so in my understanding, they actually placed you in a special education class.
At first, it was in the classroom, and they just put me off to the side. And,
okay.
And
did they have someone special to come in to work with you in the classroom even then?
No. There was the only time I had somebody special walk in and get me from the classroom was when I had to do those, I guess you'll call them psychological tests.
Right, for your placement. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Wow. So they actually literally, physically, put you off to the side of the classroom.
Right.
And you were not an acting out child. It's not like they put you to the side because you were disrupting the classroom.
No, not at all.
Yeah. And I know that that's a tactic used, you know, sometimes when a child's being disruptive. How did you feel sitting back there?
I didn't like it. I was, you know, known as a stupid one. They would call me stupid and dumb, you know, throughout the whole school day. And I hated going to school. I hated it.
Bless your heart. You know, we know someone else who has a similar story. And that's who I call my favorite adoptee next to my son,
right.
Les Brown, as you may recall in his story, that he was also placed in special ed. And what made it even worse is he had a twin brother who excelled academically. And when he would go down the hall, they would call him DP for the dumb twin. And that's torment. And so we want to teach our elders in the village as well as the other children how to have compassion and understanding, because we never know the scars that we are inflicting upon children's hearts and their minds.
That's true, because I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I mean, that's why I feel so connected to Les Brown, because of his story. I stumbled on his on one of his books. I don't remember what it was called, but it gave a depiction of his whole life, how he grew up and everything like that. And I said, wow, this is me. And, you know, from that point on, I read that whole book from cover to cover in the bookstore. And,
wow.
Yeah, and I've been watching everything that he's been doing on YouTube, and it's just amazing on what someone can do if they just, you know, have the mindset to do it.
Right. The mindset, the belief that they can do it, that validation,
right,
as well as the support. So,
right.
Exactly. So they finally did place you in a special ed class, and then this is the part that I can't even wrap my head around this. They actually put a sign on you.
Right. Yes, it was a red eye with the word isolation down in black letters down the middle. And that's what I had to wear for the whole day. It wasn't every day. It was just when the teachers got fed up with me.
And so what do you think was their purpose or their intent in doing that?
I guess it was to send a message to the other classmates. You know, if you can't learn, this is what's going to happen. But I never had any members join my class. I was the only member in that class that had the sign around the neck.
Well, I'm still trying to understand that. I'm thinking, like, okay, in case you didn't go to class and they would send you to the right class, that would give the teachers a visual sign as to where you belonged, or was it to humiliate you? Well, if we have any teachers or anyone from the educational system or anyone whose child has been set apart, I would hope that this practice or anything similar to that is not continuing. But if so, please speak out on behalf of the child, because this is harmful. If you don't know what to do, there's the old song say, you better ask somebody. Ask somebody, because that's child abuse to me. That's emotional abuse. So moving along, there was a point when you would go into your daydream, and at some point you knew what your passion and calling was, and it actually changed your life. Tell us about that.
Well, I really didn't move into my passion. It was an accident, really, because we had a situation at our church that I was going to, and for the New Year's service in Toledo, Ohio, they were going to do something different. They didn't want to do just a regular, you know, service where somebody was just preaching, whatever. So they opened it up to everybody in the congregation. You know, if you have a gift or a talent and you want to showcase it on New Year's Eve, you know, please let us know, and you have to, you know, go through auditions first. So I decided to do it, and for some odd reason,
how old were you?
I was in my I was 24.
Oh, okay. I thought this was still when you were teenagers. Okay. So go ahead.
I stumbled at a later age because I really didn't know what I was good at and what I was called to do. And and so when I was about 24, we had that service, and they were really, you know, mesmerized by how I was able to minister and captivate, you know, the audience in the same way that I studied so many other people doing the same thing. So from that point on, I started dancing regular on different Sundays, and I started my own dance team called EWP, Entertainment with Purpose. And the ages that were in the group were from, I believe, from 7 years old to 48. And it was about 9 members. And so we would practice every Saturday, and we would practice for a year, which was leading up to our major concert. And so while in between that year, you know, our name began to get tossed around here and there, and I had to I had to teach a group of younger kids who were looked like it was about like 55 of younger kids to teach them how to do a song that was going to be played for an opening concert that we had to put on for Tremaine Hawkins and Marvin Sapp, and so I did that and. People were, you know, really excited about what I was able to do as far as, you know, having the patience to teach kids because, you know, so many other people don't have that type of patience. And they said, you know, it was really a true gift to have. And so I just thank God.
How did that make you feel?
It made me feel, you know, there was a sense of value.
Mm-hmm.
And it was no longer, you know, guesswork. You know, well, okay. I guess I'm going to try this, and I guess I can try that, and trying to listen to everybody else. Oh, you should do this, and you should do that, and you should
do,
you know, trying to do what everybody else is, you know, telling me to do. But I really didn't have anybody, I didn't really have in myself what I was capable of doing, because when you have so many different people talking in your ear, it's hard to concentrate on what God, you know, has put you on earth to do.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. So when you began to work in that ministry, did that sort of become the manifestation of those daydreams?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and that was for that concert, and not just for that concert, but any time I would dance, I wouldn't dance to the same song twice. I pushed myself, and I had a goal in mind to where, okay, if I pick a song that really ministered to me, that I saw myself doing it, if I saw myself dancing to the song, then that's the song I did. If I didn't see myself dance to the song, then I wouldn't do it. But after the song was done, I would go back, you know, in my house and, you know, trying to find out a different song to dance to. And so I wanted to keep the audience, you know, guessing, okay, what is he going to do next? Because that's the same thing that James Brown did, the same thing that Michael Jackson did, the same thing that Beyonce is doing. And I wanted to do the same thing in the church setting, to where people are not just going to church and just, you know, becoming bored because you know the schedule of what's going to happen. You know the back of your hand, okay, we're going to have 15 minutes of worship, and okay, then they're going to hand out the plates. Then after that, somebody's going to get up and do announcements. After announcements, choir is going to sing. After the choir, the pastor is going to preach. After that, we get have an altar call. After that, go home. And people do that every single day, every single week on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do something out of the box that would break up everything that, people are so used to.
It's funny you said out the box. One of my favorite videos is out the box.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Love it, love it, love it. Now, let me back up a little bit, because I know now why I said I thought you were a teenager. There is a story about something happening at school during, I guess, recreational time. While the other kids were playing basketball, you were doing something else.
Oh, yeah. Back in the day, we had different groups. I couldn't tell my parents this because I wasn't allowed to dance, to worldly music because, that was a no-no in the church. But during the time of recess, you had your basketball players, you had the girls who were doing jump rope and, hopscotch if they wanted to. And then you had another group of kids who were just dancing. And so what they did, everybody would make a full circle. And we didn't have any music. We just had our hands. So everybody would make a beat with their hands, whatever. And whoever, felt the need to, they would get in the middle of a circle, and break dance. And so I was the one who always stole the show. So everybody that labeled me, stupid and slow and dumb would have to come back and say, oh, man, you ain't, I thought you were, just just what they called you, but now I see a different side of you, and no longer will I call you that. So that was my way of getting back.
Exactly. And that was where I was going to go before we got to the adult part, but it all ties right in. Because there was a point when you were made to be, criticized or just made fun of and mocked and not treated very well. But somewhere in there, you allowed that gift that was in you to come out, which gave you your place within that particular group,
right.
In that setting, in the school setting, which throughout the years has now become your passion and your work and your ministry. And even if you're talking about it, I can tell it's something that lights you up.
Right.
I could just see your whole energy. I could just feel it changing when you talk about that. What is it that gave you the ability to continue to perfect this gift? You were saying at that point, your parents did not allow you to dance to secular music. It's not until recently that in most churches that, praise dance has become something acceptable and something that is supported and valued. So at what point were you able to share your gift with your parents, and what was their response?
Well, the moment that I was able to share it was at the New Year's Eve service, because they never seen me dance at all until then.
Wow! All those years.
Yeah, all those years.
Amazing.
All those years.
What do you think would have happened if they had had an opportunity to see it before?
Well, I don't know. I really couldn't tell you because my mother, both my parents are very supportive of what I ever wanted to do. But anything that seemed like it might have been going against, the church at that time might not have been received the way it was. The first time that they saw it.
Okay. Now, was there ever any thought to you of taking what you were doing and putting it to gospel music at that time in your life?
I tried, and it didn't feel right, because I tried dancing to the Winans, didn't feel right. I tried dancing to a commission, didn't feel right. But whenever I went over to my cousin's house, Kyle, and his mother, even though they went to church, she allowed him to listen to different kind of music. So me and him would, battle each other,
okay.
Stuff like that. So it was, that's where the, you know, the turning point as far as still keeping it, you know, under wraps from my parents.
Right.
So I don't want to.
But you did have someone that you can share it with in the family, so you could go to your cousins and you have the school grounds. I'm curious to know, even though you were 16 when your sisters came along, did you ever share that with your sisters?
No.
Wow. That's
not
amazing.
At all.
That's amazing. So that's a conversation that I think we'll have here on how do we know our child's gifts or talents, you know, and what do we do to encourage that or channel that. And a lot of times it comes in a way of just being creative in our thinking. So, but I'm so glad that that has come about. So in addition to that, we also talked about your really realizing what your gift is in the world at large and choosing an occupation. So what was it that gave you a sense that I think I want to go in a slightly different direction? So what has been your occupation until recently, and what is it that you're pursuing now?
Since I've discovered and, you know, uncovered that gift of having patience with you know, with children that that their parents don't even have with their own kids, I began to understand that I could channel this in the area of medicine, and try to go into a medical field that would allow me to exercise this on a regular basis. Because, like I told you earlier, I love people. I love helping people. I love encouraging people, and I love, you know, building people up. Because there's so many different depositions that we see and hear that tear us down, whether we're near it or not. You know, we can just look around at our surroundings and, you know, feel depressed if you allow that to happen. But one thing about I wanted to do is go back to school and get my CNAs, and then from there graduate from there and get my LPN, then from there get my RN. So I'll still be able to work in the field and still be able to exercise the patience that God has given me for other people, whether, you know, I stop dancing or not. So I'm
right.
Still, you know, I'm still, you know, dancing, but it's just with a different partner. So
all right. I like that
yeah.
term. You know, something that comes to mind as you were saying that I thought would be a perfect way to integrate, because my thing is always trying to figure out how to do everything you love and get paid for it.
Right.
And I'm thinking something that you might consider is occupational therapy. You know, because you're working
that.
In the medical field, you're helping people to regain their life skills and physical mobility of all ages for whatever reason that they might find some way being debilitated. And also, you can do that with music. You can practice your compassion and your patience, and it's just something. And many times you get to see the outcome of it, because you get to work with patients on an ongoing basis rather than, you know, just a patient coming into hospital being treated and discharged. So that's
right.
just something I just wanted to share with you. So I'm looking forward to hearing that aspect of your life. So as you've gone through and you're searching and, you know, you've gotten, you know, some sense of why you're here and how you're going to be present in the world, but there's still something that stays in the back of your mind.
Yes, it's figuring out and trying to locate my birth parents because, like I told you earlier, there's still a part of me searching, you know, where did I come from? And I wish there was some type of way with the courts in Georgia where I came from that they would be able to open up my birth history, my birth records, to let me know where I came from. And, you know, it's sad that we live in a world where, you know, you can be born, but, you know, you can't really reach, you know, trace back your history unless you have, you know, the right amount of money to back you up.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, I'm still searching, you know, who they are, you know, so I can know what part of the tree that I come from.
Yes. And when we talk about search, I wanted to do a total program on that because I've had several conversations this month with young adults who are looking for various reasons, and our guest that we had earlier this week actually just united with her biological family this month. So there's a story to come from that, and I share it with you. There's a lady that I did a television interview with who actually sought her parents out. I noticed there's a difference within each state, and I asked the young lady that also that I spoke with this week who got the record about her birth family and decided she did not want to pursue actually meeting them, but just having the information gave her a lot. So I asked her to come back on the program and share that, because that is something that I believe is on your heart. It's there for a reason. And I'm so grateful to hear that your adoptive parents are supportive of you pursuing that.
Right.
Because a lot of times there have been adoptees who've waited until their adoptive parents passed on because they did not want to offend or hurt them, to make them think that they did not do a good job. And I believe as an adoptive parent, it's important for us to just realize that the adoption process is really a triad. There is the first and foremost person is the birth parent, there's the child, and there's an adoptive parent. And so we can't pretend like there was nothing in this child's life before we came into it, even if it wasn't as positive as we would like for it to have been. It's the reality. And our role is to, if the child makes that choice, is to be here and be present for them. And I think the thing that we fear the most, probably not so much that the child will be hurt, that we won't know how to respond to our child's hurt. And so as adults, I want us to be able to take our inventory of our own hearts and what's going on with us and do what it needs to be resolved in our own hearts and minds. Because a lot of times as adoptive parents, even foster parents, we have issues of unforgiveness towards the biological family. And we don't really even know their stories. And I'm not saying that, you know, child abuse or neglect is okay when I'm speaking of foster care, but I believe that when a parent takes the time to try to find a loving home that can provide for the child, I believe that that in many times is an act of love. And for us to accept that and to realize that the bottom line is that God has a plan for all of us.
Right.
So what I did do, I did a little research since I spoke with you, and I've actually posted some information on your Facebook page. And one is called Georgia Reconnect, and the other is called, which I've misplaced now. But anyway, I want to take a look. I want you to be able to look into these things and find out, because I don't think that there's as much of a charge in finding them. I think that's probably a professional requesting that to get paid for. I'm not sure, and I can't even really, with knowledge, real knowledge, speak to that. But that's just my speculation and my thought. So I want to provide resources for you to continue that and to move forward to that. And when I asked you, you know, what was it that prompted you to want to do this search? You shared something with me, I believe.
When I was watching the movie Antoine Fisher, that sparked something in me the first time, because it was, you know, again, my story, you know, on a different, on the same wavelength, but on a different perception. So that was the, I guess, the jarring moment that made me wake up and say, okay, if he could do it for himself, maybe I can do it, you know, for me. And so me and my wife have been doing different things like that, and she's been looking up different agencies and asking questions and stuff like that. So, but every little bit helps, you know, get me closer to where, you know, I'm able to find out, you know, where did I come from and who looks like me.
Okay. So, and what are some of the most important questions that you have? Is the ones that are pressing on your heart the most? that you would want to know?
One of them would, I would never ask, you know, why did you do it? But one of the questions was, why would you want to keep yourself distant from somebody who needs the information that you have? And I just wish that was a way to still, for that different information to still be open to where I didn't have, you know, questions. Because, you know, growing up, if a child doesn't know, you know, where they came from, and if they're not able to put their finger on it, you know, they walk around, you know, aimlessly, just like I did until I got up to my early 20s to find out, okay, this is what I'm good at, and this is what I'm able to, you know, give out to the world. So I just wish that was somehow those records would still be able to be, you know, open to where I was able to still see and know where I came
from.
Now,
you said that you would want to know why they kept distance. Did they was it specified in your records that they wanted to keep it closed?
Yes.
You know, for those who are listening, there are open adoptions where birth parent want the child to be able to have connection with them and even the adopted parent. There's a modified adoption where once the child is of adult age, they're okay with the child coming to find them, and then closed is where they don't want anything about their identity to be disclosed.
Right, it was closed.
Okay, so that was theirs. You know, and the other thing to keep in mind is that sometimes when a person is going into the process, it can be a very emotional, and sometimes social workers do not give them all of the information. And so it would be an emotional time. Sometimes it's just a matter of checking a box or something. We don't know if there was a lot of discussion that went along with that as to what the options were. And so, you know, perhaps maybe they would have a response to you. But even if it wasn't closed, if that wasn't the question, what would be the next question?
You know, who are my brothers and who are my sisters?
Okay.
That would be the second question. And what was, you know, who were the ones that put the family together, you know, the grandparents and stuff like that, the great-grandparents? Mainly, I really want to know the history of the family. Because I was watching on PBS today, you know, yesterday, and how one man was interviewing Tom Joyner about his family tree, and certain things that the gentleman was able to show Tom Joyner didn't know anything about, and because nobody ever talked about it, and so I was just thinking I really want to find out the history of. Of where I came from, not so much, you know, the people who are alive now, but my main focus is to know who are the people that set the bloodline in motion.
So you want to know more about your ancestry and your lineage,
right?
Okay. Would you want to meet your biological family that's alive now?
Well, I would love to. I would love to.
Okay. So, you know, and there's, you know, the whole emotional gamut with that. So I hope that you will actually stay tuned to our radio program, and we will actually be looking at that a little further down the line and listening to people's stories. And I'm sure you know that there's always, you know, a whole spectrum of emotions that go with that, you know, from,
right,
you know, positive to the negative and somewhere in between. And being clear about what your desire is, what your intent, as well as what your expectation is, and what support system do you have in place to help you as you go through with both the excitement and some disappointments in there, because I don't want people to go into it, you know, thinking it's going to be, you know, sugar and spice and everything nice always,
right,
just like life. So I think, you know, the follow-up that people have done with reunification is very, very important. Interestingly enough, it's not an adoption case, but I had an unusual case where in my private practice, I was working with a woman who had lost her child to the foster care system, and it was a month after my starting to work with her that I got this information. So one of the things that we were able to do is when the child turned 18, we were able to make the connection and for me to prepare her for all the array of emotions that she might have, you know, in her interaction with the young lady. So actually this month will be 2 years that they have reconnected, and it's been a roller coaster, but all for the better because, you know, they know. And
right.
it's just been very interesting, sometimes painful, sometimes hilarious, and sometimes just pleasant. So I just want to be able to prepare anyone who's going through the process, you know, to just take good care of your heart in the process. Take good care of your heart. Wow. So this is something that has really been a story. And we talked about your, you know, sharing your story and even maybe putting it in a book. And so you were telling me that you have also authored a book. It's not your life story, but it's something else. Would you like to share that project with our audience?
Yes. I just now finished the book, and my father is editing it for me right now. Which is, you know, I understand the editing process is going to be a long one, but you know, once he's done with that, it will be out. And one thing that I wanted to do about the book was to empower women. My mother has always kept me around strong women who were going about life, you know, with gusto. From the time that she went to Tom Harris Salon, and I was able to look at different women from a different aspect, as not as from another side of the track, to where the other guys I grew up with were just seeing girls and women who were just on TV, you know, doing the music video thing. But I got to see women from a different aspect, and so this book that I wrote, you know, came from that. And once, you know, it's released, I hope that a lot of women that will read it will be inspired to do their own thing to get, you know, their voice heard as well. So.
Awesome. And have you determined the title of the book?
Yes, Noble Disaster.
Noble Disaster. Wow, that sounds intriguing right there. So I love it. So we'll keep us posted as to the progress of that and when it's released, and I will be more than glad to help to put the word out for you.
Oh, thank you.
So I'm talking, so I have made a couple of notes of other things I was going to ask. Believe it or not, we only have 5 minutes left.
Wow.
And I've been talking, so I don't even know what I did with my notes. So see, there were some other things I was going to ask you. Well, here they are. Oh, one of the important things that we talked about was, you know, when we were talking about the cost of searching your record, we also talked about the issue of adoption assistance payment about for people who desire to adopt. And
right.
You indicated that it's something that you would definitely consider, you and your wife would definitely consider it down the line, but also being financially prepared. And we know that we all need to be able to have some type of balance in our lives as we go through this, what some determine hardship, but I will only try to speak positive, that as
right.
we, I'll say, as we be a good steward over what God has provided for us, and as he will continue to increase. But we talked about being able to afford adoption, and I mentioned the fact that one of the resources that are available that people don't know about much is the whole issue of AAP, which is Adoption Assistance Program. And if someone is adopting an older child, and by older, we mean school age, because sometimes, you know, people are referring to older, they mean a child is beyond infancy stage. But if a child is of school age, if the child has any type of developmental learning disabilities, if the child has any type of behavioral or emotional difficulties. The parents need more resources to deal with them, and those are called special needs adoptions. And AAP is available based on the child's eligibility, not the parent. So as an adoption social worker who went and did home studies, what I wanted to see was how are they managing what they have now to make sure that they're not just doing this just to add income and not take care of the child, as happens, you know, a lot of times in foster care. People are using this as their source of income, and really the child is not benefiting from it as much. So in the adoption assistance program, the child is eligible to receive assistance for their adoptive family to take care of them. And so there is no reason that someone should not be able to afford to love a child. And so if anyone has questions on that or has any expertise on that, I've been out of the direct services work with that for many years, and perhaps some things have changed, but I would really want to encourage people, not as an incentive to adopt, but as a resource if your heart is really there and if that's something that you would help you that you didn't even realize is available. Mm. So, and that's my thinking, because a lot of people in the past have not adopted. They've continued to do foster care so they can keep the money. But the child is still in the foster care system. The child may remain in that foster home until they're 18 or now older, and the foster parent will continue to collect the money. And I'm not saying that all foster parents do it just for the income, but we know that it takes, like it takes a village to raise a child, it takes some money to feed, clothe a child, and educate them and provide all the other extracurricular activities. But I've seen foster parents not adopt. They've made a commitment to the child, but legally they would not adopt. And there's a benefit to a child being adopted. For one, if they desire to change their name, they can feel more connected and legally carry that name. Also, if something happens to that foster parent, that child has no legal heirship to that person's assets. And if it's their mom, and a lot of ugly things have happened when someone is passed without a will, and the child has just been sort of dismissed, and emotionally that's been their parent, and the extended family just brushes them off. So as an adoptee, you have the same inheritance as any other child in the family. So that is something that people don't talk about. They say, well, you know, they know I'm here. And there's just many other aspects to that as well. So even like a veteran or someone, education, you know, for people who have benefits for their children to attend college or any other type of resources, those are things that our children can benefit as adoptees. So I want people to really reconsider, get the information. If you have questions that you haven't been able to find answers to, please email me at MS@foracHildCard.org. And we will look it up, because our goal is to make every child's heart warm by providing them a sense of acceptance and belonging in their families and in their communities. So I am just grateful for your family. I was hoping I would be able to chat with them during this time. Okay, so I don't see them here. I see someone in the chat room, but I guess people in the chat room can't actually leave a message. I can only speak to them. So if your parents are in the chat room and they have some words they would like to share from the perspective of adoptive parents, we're about to close out the program, but you can still give us a call at area code 424-675-8303. Again, that's 424-675-8303. So, Marcus, giving them an opportunity and in a moment to call in, do you have any closing words you'd like to share with our listeners?
One thing I'd like to say is this, you know, what's the difference between someone digging, for treasure, and digging a grave? It has everything about, to do with about location, all about your surroundings. The person who digs a grave is always surrounded by, not by movements, but by monuments, because monuments never move.
Mm.
And when you're able to dig your own grave, there's nothing that you're able to get out of it but an empty space. But someone who is digging for treasure, even though they may be digging empty space, the empty space is going to be fulfilled. Therefore, they have the opportunity to get out of the empty space to share it with other people. And I just want to encourage everybody else that may be listening or watching, whatever, that you have that treasure within you that God put in you. If you just dig for it, you'll find out that your purpose is meant to be, and your voice will be heard. So.
Beautiful. Okay, we have someone on the line. I'm going to check and see who's there. This is Miss E. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, who's calling?
My name is Cedric Franklin.
Cedric Franklin Sr.?
Correct.
Welcome. We're so glad to hear your voice.
And I've been listening to the entire show, and I really didn't know the format as far as calling in. I was just waiting until it was said to call in. And so I'm sorry I'm just getting in here this late.
Not a problem. We're just glad that you're joining us, and I'm glad we said it. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to being the village that raises a child of three. And I commend you for just the caring that you've given this young man and just the support even now in getting his book out there and just being a voice for the community. And I would say specifically for the African-American community, because I think African-American males are probably the least representation of adopted children in the United States. So I commend you and thank you for that. So listening to him, pardon me?
No, I was just saying I thank you. And, I wouldn't have done it any other way. If I
all
had
right.
to do it all over again, I'd do it exactly the same way.
Yes. So listening to Marcus as he shared with us this past hour, has anything stood out that you wanted to chime in on that he stated?
Well, one thing that stood out was my wife corrected me. Marcus was 5 years old, like he initially said, and I was thinking it was 12 for some reason, but time has gotten by me. when we first told him that he was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've learned, though, one thing I have learned is the value of the arts, because I do know that everyone has a gift and talent of some sort, because they were put here on this earth for a purpose. So if someone struggles in school, there's a reason. But still, it's trying to get to find out what that gift and talent is.
Okay.
And getting opportunities to expose them and to build on the gift and talent that they have, which obviously have place in their purpose in this life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what everybody searches for. That's why they want to know, why am I here? And there's a reason. And so we find that and are able to start walking that reason out. That's when we find completeness in who we are.
Exactly. It's interesting that Marcus had written on his profile, when I asked him what message would he like to share with adoptees, current and potential adopted parents, he said he would like to say that every child or youth has potential that needs to be identified and nurtured by the parent. And that just really touched my heart, because when I first started my organization, For a Child's Heart, 20 years ago, actually this month, in November 1992, our first event was for National Adoption Month, and it was called Giving Thanks for the Children. Excuse me, it would always fall the Saturday before Thanksgiving. And the whole intent was to showcase the gifts and talents of youth in general. We did not identify, you know, who was a foster youth or adoptive youth or anything. We just allowed the children to do their thing. And the message at the end was that every child has some gift, and out of all these children, they would not have been able to share and perform for us had not there been a parent, a mentor, or someone who believed in them to support their gift. And that's our message. They need us so much in so many different ways. So that's accurate. We're really in alignment, the three of us, on that. So that is just, it's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. There was a question I wanted to ask when I was asking Marcus when we talked the other day. Usually when they say, you know, well, I was a good child, I didn't do these things, I said, okay, is that what your parents would tell us? So what type of child did you see him as being, and did you see that change at any point?
No, Marcus was from, well, he was always, he was easy to raise. He never gave us 1 ounce of trouble. He was just the easiest child to raise. We could go and do things and take him with him even when we were young. And he would just, he wouldn't say, when are we leaving, I'm tired, or anything like that. He was a trooper. He'd hang in there.
Wow.
He was a trooper, and we did a lot of things, the three of us, ever since he was probably 2 years old, just doing a lot of things and going everywhere, and he never complained, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Actually, I could just see him
now. Now, I did get an awakening on my two girls, but he was easy.
See, he had to come first. Because then later you probably would have said, I don't think so. And I tell everyone, I said, I stuck with boys because being a girl, I didn't want to have to go through the changes that my mother and I went through during adolescence.
That time gap in between Marcus and his two sisters, yes, I was a slight bit older, so if Marcus hadn't come along first, I don't think I would have been able to hold myself together to say, no, I can do this again.
Exactly. Like I told him, he did such a good job. He had you going back for more.
Sure.
That's beautiful. And after you're talking about him, I could just see his face now. I only had seen the one picture, and he said he didn't have another. If I had thought about it, I would have asked for your information so you could have sent us some childhood pictures. I would bet he'll take some pictures then.
Oh, man.
Uh-huh. As a matter of fact.
He's supposed to be on my side.
Yeah. I'm on everybody's side. it's one big group hug, so I'm on each side.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, my wife did. She wanted to add something, if it's okay.
That's great.
Hello. This
Hi.
Time.
How are you?
Oh, great, great. I just really enjoyed the show that I've been listening to. But I want to interject something in regards to Marcus, and he didn't. I probably didn't remember it, but one of the pivotal points for him in terms of being creative and showing what he could do was when he was in the ninth grade in high school, and his English teacher encouraged him to do some writing and poems. And that's, he wrote some poems, and he has a number of poems that he wrote, but he encouraged Marcus to put his book as a contest for the Ohio poets. And he won and got his one of his poems that would just change someone's heart in called Ohio's Poets Books when he was in high school. And from then on, he started writing poems. He started speaking and other creative, artistic, you know, abilities just started showing up in him. So we just try to continue to, you know, encourage him to
wow.
to do that.
Yes. Actually, he had mentioned that before, and we did not bring that up here. And I was just thinking, what a validating and rewarding experience for that. And that's another form of expression, the expressive art. Because writing is an expressive art. Speaking, singing, dancing, all of those are expressive art. And that was what the educational system seemed to have missed, but that was a teacher who got it. So we thank God for teachers like, was it a lady?
Yes,
it was.
Yes. Okay, so that's a blessing to have teachers like her. And actually, you know, if there's any way that you might have, if she's still teaching, of just dropping her a note and thanking her for that, because I think a lot of teachers don't realize the impact that they have on our lives throughout, you know, whether it's a positive experience or negative experience. And I still remember one of my favorite teachers was, I had her for third and fourth grade. And when I graduated from graduate school, I contacted her and we connected, and it was heartfelt. She was grateful, I was grateful, because this lady had invested in my life, and I didn't know if she had any idea how much, and I wanted her to know. So that could be, you know, another part of one of your searches. That's a story in itself, like Oprah Winfrey. Yes. Well, as I said it to your husband, I commend you. I thank you on behalf of the village for just giving a child a sense of acceptance and belonging and instilling in him, you know, positive and godly values. And I'm looking forward to watching him grow even further.
That's wonderful. It's just been a passion of ours.
Thank you so much. Well, that's the end of our program for today. And let me check to make sure that there are no other callers and everyone in the guest room, just guests. Okay, we did not overlook anyone. And so this broadcast will actually, within about a half an hour, will be available on in a recording in our archives back at the same page where you found us. And then probably next week it will be posted on our website at www.forachildsheart.org under radio show. And feel free to go there and browse all of our other work that we're doing there and our television program and events. So, and hopefully we'll get to meet face to face. But in the meantime, I like the heart to heart. So everyone have a great day. Have a wonderful month of December. And remember that not only is National Adoption Month a time to celebrate and embrace our children and families, but all year long. So take care, God bless, and do something special for a child's heart. Bye-bye.
Bye. Heavenly brothers crying.